Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Hope you've got a great Labor Day weekend planned. You know, I was asking myself when Ted Kennedy died, who else is like him in Congress? And I thought, Congressman Henry Waxman. He's also a liberal lion. He has also dedicated himself to getting major legislation through Congress, working across party lines and making compromises when necessary, with his eye on the biggest prizes and biggest goals. And like Kennedy, with health issues at the core of his concern. We talked a lot about Henry Waxman on our program yesterday with the guest from the pharmaceutical industry. And as promised, Congressman Waxman is back with us now to talk about his fight, especially to get Medicare the right to negotiate prescription drug prices, but also the health reform in general. And we'll also talk about his new book, The Waxman Report, How Congress Really Works. Congressman Waxman, so nice of you to do this for us twice this summer. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be with you and honored by that comparison with Senator Kennedy, who was certainly one of my heroes.
And I know, seriously, on Kennedy, that your pedigree is different and all of that, but do you see yourself in some way as the House version of him?
I would certainly like to be like him. He fought for important things, and he was willing to make compromises to get things that affect people's lives in a very positive way. And I'm always focused on the fact that government is essential in order to better the lives of millions of Americans.
You tell a great story from the 1980s in your book about Kennedy and how he got a very conservative Republican to back a major AIDS-fighting bill that most Republicans, including President Reagan at the time, opposed. It was Senator Dan Coats of Indiana. Do you know the story I'm referring to?
Yes, I do.
You want to tell it?
Well, we were trying to get the Ryan White AIDS bill adopted. It wasn't called Ryan White Act at that point. It was legislation to provide drugs for people with HIV and AIDS and to try to do more in the area of prevention. It's still the major law dealing with AIDS today. And we were having a difficult time. But Ryan White received a lot of notoriety as a student in Indiana who was unfairly discriminated against, and people realized how wrong it was.
He was a kid. He was like 12 years old, and he got AIDS not by being gay, not by being a drug user, but by a blood transfusion.
Right, and a very sympathetic person who was treated unfairly. So Senator Kennedy and Senator Hatch decided that they wanted to name the bill after Ryan White. And one of the things that Senator Kennedy had in mind was that it would make it harder for Senator Coats from Indiana to vote against a bill named after Ryan White, who was considered a hero in Indiana because of the poor treatment he had received. And I think that helped get that particular vote and other votes as well.
And you're right that Kennedy also got Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, on board by funding some of the bill as block grants to states, not just specific help for hospitals hard hit by an AIDS population. The point being that even Utah, which didn't have much AIDS at the time, would still get money. So I guess to the subtitle of your book, which is How Congress Really Works, are both these AIDS bill stories classic examples of how activists like you and Senator Kennedy get tough legislation through Congress?
It's absolutely essential that we try to think of ways to give some accomplishments to people we're trying to get on board with the legislation. That's sometimes a compromise. It's sometimes a concession that makes the bill even better, because a lot of people who come in as opponents raise very important, valuable objections, and then when you look at it, you can see their point of view and try to reach an accommodation. And you do that across party lines and across regional differences, because that's how Congress works.
Congressman Henry Waxman, my guest on WNYC, chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee. Post a question for him at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. We may be able to get some phone calls into at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But we want to cover a lot of ground, especially on health care this morning. And you are generally considered to be in the most liberal wing of the Democratic Party in the House, but you also note in that section of the book, and you just said something related to it now, that you've always believed in the importance of bipartisan support to get anything major through Congress. So do you think that's the case right now with health care reform, despite most Republicans' block vote opposition and the Democrats' big majorities that you'd have to work with?
I wish it were possible, and I'm so disappointed that the Republicans have taken an attitude where they've been quite disciplined in all of their members following along with this idea that they want to defeat everything in health care. In fact, they want to deprive President Obama of any victories on any policy, and the reason they want to do that is solely political. In 1993 and 1994, there were Republicans who wanted to work with the Clintons on health care, but their leaders said, no, the best thing for us is to defeat it. And they won control of the Congress in the 94 election as a result. They're trying to play that game again, but it's a lot more serious this time because the problems are so much worse. Let me give you a good example. When we were trying to do something to pick up the economy and private lending was frozen, all economists from the right to the left said we needed a government stimulus bill in order to get the economy moving, to get jobs again. The Republicans, all of them in the House, voted against the bill. In the Senate, where they needed 60 votes, they were able to get three Republicans, only three Republicans, the two members from Maine, and then Republican Senator Arlen Specter from
Pennsylvania, who's now a Democrat.
Well, he's now a Democrat because the Republicans told him that they were going to defeat him because of that vote. And so he became a Democrat. This is the only way he could stay in the Senate. Well, Senator Grassley and Senator Enzi were supposed to be working on a bipartisan basis with Senator Baucus. And I know they have very much on their minds what happened to Senator Specter. Their leadership has pretty much communicated to them that they'll be watched carefully by fellow Republicans. If they leave the party, then maybe they won't be the top Republicans on these committees if they're reelected. And Senator Grassley is up for election this next year.
And I want to get to your current fight against the president's deal and Senator Max Baucus's deal with the pharmaceutical companies that would lock in higher drug prices for people on Medicare. And let me get to it through the title of your book, The Waxman Report, because it looks to me, reading the book, like that phrase, a Waxman Report, comes from specifically your work to expose the rising cost of prescription drugs to seniors in the United States fully a decade ago. Is that right?
A decade ago and even more recent than that, because what we've done by reports is try to draw attention. It's a form of oversight, and we wanted to draw attention to problems that needed to be resolved. And one of the problems in our country that still haunts us is the very high price that Americans have to pay for prescription drugs, much higher than people in other countries.
And the book says your first Waxman report on prescription drug prices was centered on Maine, where seniors were becoming well aware of the difference between the same medications costs in the U.S. and across the border in Canada. And this helped lead to the Medicare prescription drug bill that passed under President Bush. So now we apparently have this deal between the White House, Senator Max Baucus, and the pharmaceutical industry that the drug manufacturers will pour $150 million into pro-reform advertising, and those ads are already running, in exchange for Medicare not having the legal right to negotiate price with the pharmaceutical companies. Industry spokesman Ken Johnson confirmed that deal here on yesterday's show, although in a backdoor kind of way.
The problem is that the agreement has been identified by critics and skeptics because the Senate Finance Committee has not released the details of its legislation yet. When it does, it will become more clear as to what the actual agreement was.
So, Congressman Waxman, I gather you are opposing that deal and actively trying to scuttle it. Is that correct?
I'm not for that deal. We were not part of the deal. And any law has to clear the House, the Senate, and get the signature of the president. We were not brought in to negotiate it. I would never have agreed to a deal like that. The administration was looking at it from a different perspective. They wanted to get the drug companies and other industries to support their efforts for health reform, and they made concessions that, in this particular case, was not the best. The drug companies have had a windfall, and we're letting them off the hook if we just agree to what the administration wanted, because they're going to make billions of dollars with all these new customers, and they shouldn't be allowed to keep the windfall. We ought to use that money in one particular area where they got a windfall for seniors who face a donut hole cost if they've paid into their pharmaceutical prices, but they have to use drugs much more than the limits, and that's not fair. The drug companies make money out of it, and the seniors get hurt. So I want to close the loopholes, and I also want a negotiated price with the drugs. We've got millions of people we're buying drugs for. Why shouldn't the government get a better price from the pharmaceutical companies when we bring them so many new customers?
Are you working at cross purposes with the president here? He's trying to get the major players, including this industry, on board for the big prize of systemic health reform that you've been working for decades. And you know from your long experience, as we were just discussing, and as you give so many examples of in your book, that uncomfortable compromise is necessary. And yet you're trying to break one of the key deals the president made to accomplish this goal. Why go down this path and threaten the whole historic enterprise?
I don't think we're threatening the whole historic enterprise. And if I had thought that was a good compromise, I would have agreed to it. But I wasn't brought in. No one in the House was brought in to be part of that compromise. It was a compromise with the administration and just one of the Senate committees. In order to satisfy the drug companies. But the drug companies have to understand, as everyone else does, that the bill needs to be approved by everybody involved.
So wait, saying you would approve this deal if only you're asked and included? This is just about sort of turf and standing?
No, not at all. Had I been brought in, I would have turned to the president and I would have said, Mr. President, our job is not to make the drug companies richer. Our job is to help the seniors and not have to pay so much for their pharmaceuticals. This industry, the pharmaceutical industry, has gotten away with windfall profits at the expense of the seniors. Let me give you an example. There are a lot of seniors who are also very poor. So they're on Medicare, but they're also on Medicaid. When we used to pay for drugs under Medicaid, we insisted on a discount because we were using the buying clout of all the millions of people on Medicaid. Well, the Republicans, when they did the pharmaceutical drug benefit, said, oh, we're only going to consider them as Medicare, not Medicaid. And immediately the drug companies made billions of dollars more because we no longer got the discount.
I know about this. This means that 8 million people on Medicare suddenly saw their prescription drug prices go up because they got shifted from Medicaid prices to Medicare prices.
It also meant that the government, especially, had to pay that extra cost. Why should we pay that extra cost to the drug companies when this total bill of covering almost all Americans will mean more people will get drugs, more people will get health coverage, and the drug companies are going to make a killing, and then we're going to let them keep that windfall at the expense of the seniors? I would have told the president that I wouldn't go along with a deal like that, and I would have urged him not to.
But let me play you a few clips from yesterday's show with the pharma guest, Ken Johnson, making his case against you for why it benefits all Americans, in his opinion, to have prescription drug prices not negotiated to rock bottom by Medicare. And here's one of his reasons.
The CBO has said quite clearly you cannot save any money under Part D by negotiating, by having the federal government negotiate it directly with drug manufacturers, unless you restrict the formularies. In other words, you restrict access to medicines. And I don't think that's what seniors want.
All right. I'm going to play that clip for Congressman Waxman tomorrow, what you just said, and see if he has a different interpretation of it. Congressman Waxman, you know the argument.
Well, that's not an accurate argument. We, in the Medicaid program, negotiate lower prices, and we don't change the formulary. In fact, one of the concessions the government made is that all the drugs would be on the formulary. But even if you change the formulary, it's not the worst thing in the world. That's what many of the pharmaceutical benefit managers do, and pharmacists do it. They provide the generic drug at a lower price. And they say that's the one we'll pay for. If you want the brand name drug, which is the exact same drug at a higher price, well, you can pay for the difference yourself. So I think he's being disingenuous to say that there's something wrong with having a formulary and saying the government must have a formulary in order to negotiate a lower price. We didn't have to have a change in the formulary when we did it under Medicaid, and we don't have to have a change in formulary for doing it under Medicare.
Here's another argument. I asked him, if Walmart, the biggest private company in America, gets to negotiate for price for its customers with pharmaceutical companies, why can't Medicare, the biggest government-run health program?
Well, first of all, it's an apples to oranges comparison. The fact of the matter is, and look, Walmart's program is great. It's helped a lot of people who are struggling right now financially. But these are older generic drugs. They're maintenance drugs that have been on the market for 20, 25, 30 years in some cases. It's basically the only thing when you figure out you're paying for $4 is the cost of manufacturing. That's it. There's no research and development tied to it. There's no innovation. There's no medical progress. Again, these are drugs that have been on the market for a long, long time.
So, Congressman Henry Waxman, he mentioned research and development. He mentioned innovation. He mentioned new medications. This is their main argument, you threaten progress. You threaten research and development if the profits of the drug companies are slashed that much. Do you dispute it?
That's a very self-serving argument. Then there should be no limit to the profits they make, because they argue they're putting it into research and development. The truth of the matter is they spend more money on marketing their drugs than they do on R&D. Most of these pharma companies are not doing the research anymore. They're just marketing these drugs.
Well, they would say they spend so much money on marketing because that comes back to them directly in more sales, whereas research costs are in a totally other category because there's so much loss involved with research. Here's a little bit more of Ken Johnson's argument.
You know, one out of five medicines that go into clinical trials eventually makes it to the market. So you not only have to recoup the $1.2 to $1.3 billion that you've invested in the drug that makes it to the market, but you've also got to recoup the expenses for all of those expensive failures.
So, Congressman Waxman, what about those numbers? And we don't see the medical innovation, the medication innovation coming out of our friends in Europe, those countries where they do have much cheaper prices, or from Canada. Do we?
Well, we do, because these drug companies are international companies, and there's research going on all over the place. But the reason we want to protect their innovation and research is obvious, and we do that through giving them a patent. We give them exclusivity, which means that they have a monopoly control over their drugs until they have a generic competitor. And for many of those drugs, they're still on patent, and if they're selling a whole bunch of different drugs to a buyer, they have to make concessions to those who have the leverage of a lot of people for whom they're purchasing. That's what other countries do for their citizens. That's what Walmart's doing for its customers. It's what the government does under Medicaid and the VA program. And it's what we ought to do under Medicare, because we've got the buying clout, and we shouldn't pay them just whatever they want because they're doing some good things, because that's not a good enough reason when we protect their exclusivity through a very long period of time for protection so they can recoup their investment, they do quite handily.
You said Medicare has the buying clout, and that's another part of his argument. He says Medicare is so uniquely big, so much bigger than Walmart, so much bigger than Medicaid, with every senior in America on it, that it wouldn't negotiate price. It would, in effect, dictate price, and that wouldn't be fair.
I don't see what's unfair about it. There has to be a negotiation. And when they have the only drug for which they have a patent that people need, they'll get a higher price for it. There's no question about it. But there are a lot of their drugs that are no great contributions. They're one of a number of products that can do the same thing. And in under those circumstances, we ought to say, we want a discount. We want a lower price on that drug. Anybody who buys a product for lots of customers should be able to use that buying clout for leverage. And what the drug companies want is they should have all the leverage. They should get paid whatever they want. That other countries negotiate their prices. Other countries even set controls on prices. And then that means that the drug companies want our citizens and our government to be paying more to them to make up for others. And I don't think that's reasonable.
How could they say no? You've got how many seniors in Medicare? How many? Some tens of millions of Americans on Medicare. And you go, this is by far the biggest group in the world. And here's what we're going to pay for that heart medication. And this is what we're willing to pay. And this is what we came through, through the Medicare system or maybe through Congress with. And this is what we're paying. And they say, no, that's not enough.
Right.
What power do they have to enforce that?
Well, if they say they're not going to sell it, then a lot of people are going to say, wait a second, if that drug is so unique and so important, we've got to be able to have it. And then so they have more clout on their side. But let's say they're selling a drug for which there are other drugs that are just as good. A lot of their new drugs are Me Too drugs. They're no real great improvement. And if that's the case, then the pharmaceutical managers for people with private insurance negotiate. The employers who cover their employees negotiate. The government should be able to negotiate as well.
Henry Waxman, chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, author now of the Waxman Report, How Congress Really Works. He's in the thick of the health care reform debate and legislative process. And Giovanni in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Henry Waxman. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you. I wanted to thank the congressman because he really made two very important points. I'm a senior citizen, and I'm 70, and here it is in September, and I've existed, I've ran through my basic amount of money, and I'm in a donut. And he's absolutely correct. If the drug companies are allowed to increase the basic price of drugs, what it will do is allow my donut to be exhausted by, I get into my donut maybe in June.
And for people who don't know, the donut hole is the gap in Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage where they've covered about $2,000 of expenses, you have to pay about the next $4,000 before it kicks in again. So, Giovanni, would you make this deal? Because I understand this is part of the deal on the table. The donut hole will be filled or partly filled in exchange for Medicare not having the power to negotiate price. Would you make that deal?
No.
Why not?
Because, see, when Medicare, because the drug company will raise the price, the donut hole, that first $2,500 is covered by how much they actually charge. So that means that if I'm, right now, they charge me $222 for Beta, which I take is an insulin-type plan. And that I only pay $88 for it when I go to the company.
So if the price goes up, you hit the donut hole faster. Congressman Waxman, that is part of the deal, isn't it? That they'll use some of this money that they would have otherwise lost to lower prices through this negotiation to close some of this donut hole in Medicare Part D. Is that correct?
That's what I presume to be the case, although I've heard different stories from the White House as to what they've agreed to. But if that's what they've agreed to, I just don't think that's the best deal for the seniors. For example, they're going to help fill in the donut hole by donating some of the – or taking a cut in the drugs they will then provide to seniors in the donut hole. Well, that serves their interest in a number of ways. It doesn't cost them more money to make those drugs. And they keep people on the brand name drug because those are the ones they'll get the discount for. They won't be able to get the generic drugs at a discount. So the drug companies are doing the best for their industry but they're not doing the best for the American people who have to pay the bill, or the seniors who have to come up with the additional funds.
Anne in Manhattan, who used to be a health journalist in Canada. Is that right, Anne?
Yep.
And?
When I first moved back here in the mid-90s, I was working on a story in the shocking difference in pharmaceutical drug prices between here and Toronto. And I finally reached a very senior executive with a major pharmaceutical company, and I asked him why brand-name drugs sold in Canada and in the U.S., drugs often made in the same factories, why there was such an enormous difference in price. And he was about to retire, and I think it's the only reason he was candid with me, and he said, well, you're right, it has nothing to do with research costs, it has nothing to do with advertising. He said, it's what the market will allow. Americans will pay these prices, Canadians won't. And if Americans realized that, then they would pay lower drug prices. And I've never forgotten that conversation.
And thank you for your call. And we're almost out of time, Congressman, but another point that was reported in the press about the deal between the pharmaceutical companies and the White House for the industry support on health reform was that the president would drop his position in favor of trying to get the cheaper drugs imported from Canada legally. But Ken Johnson from Pharma yesterday said that that actually is not part of the deal. Listen.
Wall Street Journal reported after our CEOs went over to the company that there was an agreement on importation. What we actually said, we probably looking back on it, both the White House as well as our companies used a poor choice of words. What we said was we agree with the White House, or the White House agrees with us, that if in fact coverage is extended to every single person in America, there won't be a need for importation because the issue loses its political buoyancy, because more people are covered now, their drug costs come down, this no longer is an issue.
You think, Congressman Waxman, it may just disappear as an issue because ultimately there won't be a need for importation?
The real question is how much will government and government pay for the drugs for seniors? How much are seniors going to have to pay if government doesn't pay at all? And there's still an issue of costs. We've got to lower the costs in health care. That was an important principle in this reform effort. And we shouldn't be spending more for pharmaceuticals than others in other countries just to make the drug companies richer. It's a cost that is unreasonable, and we ought to lower that cost.
All right. Before you go, and my guest, Congressman Henry Waxman, chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee, he's in the thick of the health reform legislative process and author now of the Waxman Report, How Congress Really Works. Congressman, President Obama, as you know, has scheduled his first major nationally televised speech on health care reform for next Wednesday night. This is his first departure from his game plan of letting you all in Congress draft a bill. What are you hoping the president will say? What are you fearing he might say Wednesday night?
I'm looking forward to the president's speech. I certainly back this reform effort, even though we might have a disagreement on this pharmaceutical issue. But I want him to make clear to the American people the real basic reasons of why we're doing this. We spend more money for health care in the United States than any other nation in the world. We have 48 or 50 million people without insurance. People have insurance they may not be able to afford. Many people are denied insurance because they have previous medical issues. And a lot of people don't have insurance because they're working and their employers don't offer it. This is a crazy system. We can't sustain the costs of it. And it's immoral, it seems to me, to let so many Americans go without access to basic health care.
And that's what you hope the president will say. So how optimistic are you at the end of the day that 1 year from now you'll be able to write a new chapter when the paperback edition of the Waxman Report comes out on how you finally helped steer health reform through Congress?
I'm optimistic we're going to pass a bill. And after we do, people will look back and say, why did it take them so long? Why did the United States have to stand behind all other industrial countries and pay so much for a health care system that left so many people insecure?
Congressman Henry Waxman, thank you so much for spending all this time
with us. Thank you. My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. A new proposal for turning vacant luxury condos into affordable housing. And then we'll talk about something very uncity-like to do in New York. Join a cricket count. Stay with us.